They say I hate young black men, but the truth is quite opposite. I'm a big fan of young black men, and I'll tell you why. Do you know who kills the most young black men in this country? Young black men, and I'm a big fan of that. So keep buying your guns and killing each other just the way you are.
Don't you like to hear that? You like to hear that straight out, straight to them. Tell the truth. Don't beat around the bush. Talk to the black man like you give him some respect, if not as a race, as an individual, that we do not mix well with the black race. Never did, never will. Yeah, there are a lot of people mixing with them, but these are the dregs of our society as far as I'm concerned. And that will come to an end one day too. We're the only ones who really give respect to black men. Yeah, we want separation. How about that? Separation. With separation, there's no excuses. The black race will have to stand on its own, not lean on the white man, not follow the white man around, but do their own thing. What's wrong with that? How can you say that's hatred? That's not hatred. That's respect, because we believe they can build some type of society. Yeah, we do. Well, it's the 19th of July, Wednesday, Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day, and here we go again. How do you like all those clowns in Washington arguing and fighting over this health bill, while they support the corporations that are putting out food that's killing people all over the country? Big Pharma and so forth. They're the biggest receivers of Big Pharma support. And they're whining over the health bill. It's not health bill, it's a death bill. That's right. You think any of those senators up there, congressmen, really give a shit about your health? Washington's got the most hypocrites of any place in the world, I think. I don't think that Moscow's got that many hypocrites. And that Mitch McConnell, wouldn't you just like to, whatever? I can't stand that son of a bitch. Yeah, most of those Republicans, they're just waiting to get Trump out of there so they can go back to their old game plan. I'm not saying I'm a super Trump supporter, because I know what his game is. More and more armaments, more and more military, more and more occupation, which doesn't get us anywhere until we learn to get out of that kind of crap. We got 8,000 men on the border of North Korea. Yeah. 8,000 men. Plus, we've got some ships over there, and we've got some flying B-52s over that little country. Well, wait a minute. As I recall, we gave all this shit to North Korea. I remember when Hillary's wayward husband, Bill, I think it was he that gave him thousands and thousands of gallons of kerosene, because they didn't have anything to heat their houses with. Yeah. And wasn't it he or one of those presidents, one of those war criminals who gave them nuclear weapons? Gave it to them. Because where would they have gotten if it wasn't for those people in Washington? You see, we keep setting up our enemies, our so-called enemies. My enemies are all in Washington. I don't claim any other enemies anymore. Not even Israel. They want to kick the shit out of the Palestinians. That's their business. I'm not supporting it, not promoting it. But you've got two religious fanatic groups. You got the Jews and you got the Muslims over there. And they're either using that as an excuse or something, but they're never going to get any place. They're never going to solve it. So why don't you just kill each other? Just kill each other and get it over with. I wish all religious fanatics would just kill each other. I hope you realize that there wouldn't be any crazy Israel if there wasn't a massive number of crazy Christians. The biggest promoters, pushers, financiers, and everything of the Judeo people in Israel and so forth has been Christians. Yeah, good white Christians have supported and promoted and pushed them and even supported the attack on the liberty. At least they've never spoke up and done anything about it. They don't give a shit because they'll always support Israel no matter what. So, who's your enemy? Who's your enemy? I think if you want to talk about the Jews, you got to talk about the Christian Jews, Zionist Christians, and so forth. Because they're just as fanatical, more fanatical than most Jews. I've known Jews that were not fanatical at all, that they didn't even care to be called a Jew. Yeah. In fact, I've met quite a few Jews who are anti-Jew. How about that? And what about all the Jewish atheists? Well, how can they be Jews if they're atheists? They say, oh, well, we're cultural Jews. We're ethnic Jews. No. If you're an atheist, you're not a Jew because you don't cling to that old-time religion. And so why do you call yourself a Jew? Would you call yourself a Christian if you became an atheist? If you said, I don't believe in this shit, would you call yourself an atheist? If you're a Christian, it's all screwed. See, Christianity and religion has fucked up the whole world, and it keeps getting worse, especially as their toys got more powerful and their atomic bombs and big ships. And if you don't believe in Jesus, we're going to bomb the shit out of you. Yeah, that's what it's been all about for a long time. Look at the Civil War. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. Bullshit, he ain't coming anyplace because he doesn't exist. All that stuff. Hypocritical and phony. Because a good share of the people who mouth that crap don't believe it. They don't believe it, but they think they must do it. And they do it. And we must support Israel no matter what. Oh, if we shouldn't support the Palestinians, why should we support the Jews? Oh, they helped us out during the Cold War, gave us secrets. Yeah, right. Who were the spies that stole our atomic weapon secrets? Almost all of them were Jews. And they took them to Russia and gave them to the Jews in Russia. Yeah, don't forget that. So forget about all this right-wing neocon bullshit. Let's call a spade a spade. Let's get out of this religious nonsense. Yeah, are you an Aryan? Well, then say I'm an Aryan, you know. That's what you should do, boys and girls. You know, back in the 30s, Mayor LaGuardia of New York, he was a short little guy. He used to read the funny papers on Sunday on the radio for the kiddies. That was his way of gaining popularity, and he had popularity. He was there when Charles Lindbergh came back from his flight in the ticker tape parade and all that kind of stuff. Well, today I'm going to launch on the reading of another little booklet by my friend Evan Arthur McCallum. The title is Horus Saves, Conquest by Religion, How Financiers and Powerful People Use Religion as a Weapon to Enslave You, and You Keep Falling for It. You keep falling for it. Well, anyhow, that's what we're going to do today, maybe in the next few days. I think there's about 180 pages in this book. So let's get at it. How religion is used to conquer you and make you a slave. And it's done by the very pinnacle of capitalism in this country and around the world. And if it's not capitalism, they'll use some other excuse, Sharia law or whatever. Let's start with the introduction. Horace Saves is a novel that delves into the motivations of people who start religions, and it shows how easily such religions can be fabricated to conquer another group and colonize their territory. It works every time. The basis of this novel comes from the Near and Middle Eastern mythology. The correct names of religions, places, and people are not presented so that the previously learned concepts will not influence the reader until the story's basic ideas have been presented. A fact little known to the American public is that quite a few of the ancient Middle and Near Eastern religions grew out of early religions that contained many of the same basic concepts. When formulating a religion for any purpose, many pragmatic concepts could be gleaned from religions existing earlier to produce a new and wonderful religion that could be presented to obtain a near automatic acceptance among the masses, which makes the masses become asses. In order for us to understand why people are so religiously gullible, it is necessary to understand how man's motivations are driven. Humans are ethnocentric animals that have lived in families, clans, or extended families, and tribes for tens of thousands of years. Kingdoms were later formed by uniting clans and tribes or related blood for the defense of large territories. Each group of tribes or clans that could unite had their own forms of social rules that made them function easily. The uniting of the clans and tribes produced the need for a unifying of the group feelings and mores so that the social cooperation could move more easily be accomplished. The unifying of feelings and mores was done through the use of religion that modify the concepts in the conscious and subconscious mind. Most of the people worshipped their distant ancestral heroes who were depicted in statues as handsome and beautiful people. As long as the people were on the same ancestral background, there was little trouble in socially uniting. As some of the kingdoms grew and non-related people were included in the nation, there was a need for a religion that would appeal to all. Thus, a universal religion with the universal God was an attractive idea as long as people would agree that people were equal. Aha! As I've said many times, equality is a lie, the perennial lie. Anyhow, the religious fervor then would follow. We are now coming to the end of the universalist dream world. For over 2,000 years, the concept of universalism has proven very dangerous and fallacious. There were no equal people to fit the concepts of a religion that judged all people equal. With the end of the USSR and the slow breakdown of societies of China and USA, all major universalist societies are slowly being terminated. Horace Saves was written to show the ease with which a universalistic religion could be fabricated for invasion and control of people. Looking back over about 2,000 years, the concept of universalism has created more chaos than any other philosophical concept. Religious wars in Europe killed 40% of the population in the Dark Ages. Other liquidations in Europe were as terrible as the problems of universalistic communism in Russia or China. Until the people of the Western world understand religious methods and how they function, they will not be able to reason well enough to solve their social problems produced by the hucksters and politicians. Horace Saves not only gives the readers an idea of the hidden agenda of ancient religious invaders, it will give the background for the coming book. Horus is Lord, which illustrates the psychological methods used in religious conversion. The coming book, Horus is Lord, will illustrate the most effective methods of promoting socially eroding philosophy through religious methods that allow the invaders to strike at the deepest felt emotions of the populace. Religious methods implant the moral concepts that regulate much of a person's life. Of course, the religious philosophy determines the religious values. There is a definite formula which is employed by the religious invaders. Its components are as follows. 1. Hook the populace. In order to gain entrance to the people's belief system, there must be a demand for the concepts presented. In Horace Saves, such a demand is created by hooking the populace of the empire with the very attractive promise of giving them a far better life and a better death than the one they could normally expect. 2. Brainwash and plant desires deep in the subconscious. Once the desired concepts of the better life or death are consciously accepted, the destructive philosophy is projected into the subconscious mind by trigger words, rituals, ceremonies, and prayers that implant a new moral or logic base. Trigger words, rituals, and ceremonies work on the association and repetition method of learning. Prayer uses the hypnosis method of implanting the concepts of a new philosophy in the subconscious. In other words, you meditate yourself into being controlled. Once again, I've done all this. I've been in a whole lot of churches. I've been involved in Christianity quite a bit, even Christian Identity. But I threw it all away because it's nonsense. Once again, the formula has a 1-2 punch. First, the conscious desire is generated, then the destructive elements are embedded in the religious followers on deep thought levels through mind-impacting maneuvers. Almost all people who read this book will be living in a nation that is taking on the qualities of an ancient empire, such as Imperial Rome, just before its fall. Horace Saves will make you think about the real reasons behind disturbing social trends as well as who's behind them and make you laugh at the same time. Enjoy yourself. Chapter 1. Once upon a time, in the far lands of the Middle Desert, there lived a group of tribes known as the Genius. They were a clever group of people who thought in many ways to fool and cheat their enemies, but they were not bold in battle unless they could easily and completely overpower their rivals. In fact, they were best in retreating, pleading for mercy, acting as martyrs and producing propaganda that would neutralize their enemies through greed or sex. The blundering cousins of the Genius, the smartasses, who lived nearby, were bold and strong in battle and enjoyed warfare. The smartasses would win in battle, but they could never find ways to maximize their victories, so they continued to roam the desert looking for their elusive goals in life. However, the Genius tribes prospered, for they were very industrious in cheating and fooling their neighbors, including the smartasses. Of course, the Genius considered those outside of their tribes as the never-mentioned alien enemy. The alien outsiders knew that they could not trust the Genius, and they slowly isolated themselves from them. This presented a problem because the Genius needed more land for their people, but they could not buy any. land from the surrounding tribes. They could not take the land by force of arms, for they prided themselves in being cowards. Their usual tactic was to get the other tribes to fight for them by political and social trickery. But by now, all of the local tribes knew of their methods, and it was becoming harder to trick and cheat their neighbors. Among the tribes of the genius, there was one known as the Buyout, undisputably the best of the liars and cheaters of the genius group, a true nobility. Of all the members of that tribe, the most important person was the leader, Leveraged Buyout. He understood their great problem and pondered many solutions for their lack of land. He also worried and thought a lot. The problem was so discouraging that he soon became disheartened and unconfident. The idea of being a true humanitarian who could not cheat and surround the surrounding tribes for the benefits of the genius gave him an extreme pain in his lower body. Finally, he decided to see a psychiatrist, Sigmund Hogg, who loved to wallow in other people's mud. Sigmund Hogg had an open appointment time the next day. Leveraged quickly accepted and then asked the fee for services. The fee would be a goat, which could easily be procured at the market. That day at the appointed time, Leveraged Buyout presented the goat and his problem to Sigmund Hogg. The need for land versus the attitude for the neighboring tribes was presented clearly. Sigmund Hogg understood immediately a great humanitarian must present bigger and bolder concepts in order to solve the dilemma. If the lie is big enough, no one will believe that it's a lie. There must be a real need for the lie, a hope for a better life, and that did not come. At least another great dream or of hope. There must be a long-range hope, and the hope for a solution to everyday problems of the common man. The appeal of the lie must be to the hopes and dreams of everyone, especially for the women. They have the best emotional drive and the least logical thoughts. Appeal to the women and you have the men by the balls. Leveraged asked Sigmund, what do most people want that could be presented as a goal to help us obtain the land we desire? Sigmund Hogg replied, a social utopia of everlasting peace would please women. Also an everlasting life would please both men and women. Leveraged objected that both goals were impossible. There have always been wars and people have always died. Sigmund replied, people have always lived in hopes of a miracle, and there are times when there is an absence of war and life is easy. We could paint a picture of peace and prosperity if everyone believed in universalism. Leveraged then asked, what do you mean by universalism? Sigmund then replied, universalism is the philosophy of a special form of utopia. This utopia has its belief that anyone and everyone can join its so-called society. All you really have to believe is that there will be a heavenly society if everyone is accepted into one society. Everyone would share with everyone else just like one happy family. Unquote. Leveraged asked, will they share across tribal bloodlines? Oh, yes. This, they say, would prevent tribal warfare. This idea is supposed to break down the tribal and national boundaries. With everyone sharing, there should be tranquility throughout the utopia. Also, since no one knows anything about death, a wonderful story about life after death in heaven would fit the death situation. If very good stories were presented on both subjects, you could soon take credit for peace and for the expected life after death. Most people believe that what they want to believe regardless of the facts. just get the story in writing and hopeful ignorant will believe anything that comes from the written word. The ignorant are hopeful, thus many will accept the story of Utopia, Sigmund confided. Remember, do not offend the intelligent with the story, but ignore their objections as if they really did not understand what you had written. To give objections to the argument of intelligent would give value to their ideas. But how do we get their land? Asked Leveraged. Sigmund paused and smiled. You simply join their utopian society, and of course genius will still quietly retain their own tribal ties. I don't understand. How do we get there into their tribal society? Replied Leveraged. You advocate a utopia that has no ethnic boundaries. To enter this utopia, a person must pledge his belief in this concept. In other words, we get the aliens to drop their tribal boundaries by substituting a utopia without ethnic boundaries. As long as genius did not openly profess their tribal ethnic ties, they can join this group. You are then on the inside, commented Sigmund Haug. Sigmund Haug leaned back and waited for questions. There were none. He then spoke. The utopian society concept would make a wonderful base for a political advancement. Politicians who would like to explain their tax base could advocate political equality to the desired group of people whom they would like to annex into their state. If force is used, since we are all cowards, we would not have to be in the army, but simply be the advisors and business people for the advancement of a small empire. The belief in the new utopia will pacify the about-to-be-conquered tribe or nation. Once you see the direction of social flow, making money and buying land is easy. Leveraged, you must make your plans carefully. You must think through your concepts and formulate an almost unbelievable story with as much double talk as possible to confuse people. You need only the believers. The women will drive their men to be fodder of the war gods so that they can have the new utopia. Remember that all of this will be done by relief, not logic. Don't argue with anyone, for this raises the demons of logic and obscene naked truth, the psychiatrist admonished his friend. Leveraged paid his respects to Sigmund's mistress. He then proceeded to slowly ride his ass through the streets of Blunslumdydum on his way home to the neighborhood of Buyout. He was greeted by his son, Enhanced Truth, at the gate of his stable. Enhanced Truth helped his father unbridle the ass because Leveraged looked like he had had his mind on many other thoughts. Enhanced noticed this and asked his father what the problem was. Leveraged then said, I have a start on our biggest social problem, the need for more land. I'm just beginning to put together a solution to our problems. We will either expand our land or breed into starvation. It is just a matter of time. Nothing will stop our men's sex drive and our women's love of children, so we must do something or our fate is sealed. Enhanced Truth agreed to this analysis of the problem, but was not so worried, for he had thought many times of ways to conquer the alien masses. Youth is always optimistic. Leveraged Buyout told Enhanced Truth that Sigmund Haug had told him. And now they must start a new plan and a great vision of a coming universalistic utopia for the alien masses. And that's the end of the first chapter. We'll continue on probably tomorrow. Now, this is an interesting story coming out of the Consortium News called New York City Frontline of Income Inequality. What do you mean? There's always going to be income inequality. It's impossible. Equality of any type is ridiculous. Now, when you're dead, I guess you're pretty equal, but other than being dead, there is no such thing as equality. Anyhow, New York City faced a crisis 4 decades ago with a massive electrical failure and fear of crime. Now it confronts another challenge, a vast gap between the super rich and the rest, writes Michael Winship. Well, what's the shock? There's always been this massive inequality of finances. There's always been the super rich and the poor. The difference is there's been sort of a middle class in between for the United States. And that, of course, that was built on the blowing the shit out of Europe and reducing Europe to ashes, which gave the United States industry and the capitalists here a leg up. And out of that came the middle class, so-called middle class. But there's a lot of discrepancy between so-called middle class, upper middle class, lower middle class, higher poor class. They use all that terminology, just like my book I've been reading to you today. It's all mostly like is said, is bullshit. 40 years ago this summer, the lights went out. It was July 13th, 1977, a hot, muggy night here in Manhattan. Lightning strikes set off a cascade of mechanical failures at Con Edison that plunged virtually the entire city into darkness. Wow. 9 million people were without power. Thousands had to be rescued from the subways, tunnels, and there was looting, lots of looting. 1,000 fires were set, 1,600 stores were ransacked, and 3,400 were arrested. I wonder what the majority of the race of those people were. Oh, you're not going to tell me they were black. The other economic damage was estimated at more than $300 million, well over $1 billion in 2017 dollars. Wow. I was having dinner at my then-girlfriend's apartment when the lights went out. We tuned in a small battery-powered radio and listened as the news began spreading of trouble and violence around the city. Of course, when anything like that happens, violence follows right away. Immediately, let me steal something, goddamn. The two of us stayed where we were, and the next morning I walked back to my place a few blocks away. West 57th Street was almost empty. Small groups of people gathered in front of their buildings talking about what had happened. The power remained out, and I climbed the 11 stories to my darkened studio apartment, but the water was still pumping, and I could shower and change. I worked at our public television station, WNET, and the offices were closed, but their electricity already was back, so I went up to the local news department to see whether anyone was around. I was put to work writing news copy about the events of the night and the adversaries' advisories about closings that would be read on the air when the transmitter was up and running again. That was one bizarre long hot summer, 1977. Incidentally, there were far more babies born, very high rate of babies born after that blackout. 1977, and not simply because of the massive blackout, the city still was trying to pull itself from near bankruptcy after being fleeced, of course, by the powers that be, and the greedy Jews and all those people. Yeah. And, of course, during that time, the federal government refused to bail out New York City. Well, they shouldn't have, except the federal government steals from the people in the cities and then doesn't want to give any back. Ford to city, dropped dead not long after Congress begrudgingly enacted the President Ford signed legislation that loaned the city $2.3 billion with interest. Wow, man. New York's budget was taken over by an emergency financial control board administered by the state. Police layoffs contribute to a rise in crime. No, Negro law enforcement, lawbreaking did. The ruins of buildings in the South Bronx became a symbol of urban decay, and new structures abandoned in the mid-construction littered the skyline like so many rotten teeth. That movie, Wolfen, shows the South Bronx the way it was at that time. It looked like Berlin in 1945. The subway system was falling apart, the cars smeared with graffiti. In just a year, ridership had dropped by 25 million passengers. I wonder why they didn't want to ride on that. Urban subway. Would you have wanted to get on the urban subway back then if you had knowledge of what the hell was going on? The subway system was falling apart, the cars smeared with graffiti. I read that. In other words, the Negroes and other Undermenschen had taken over the city. So roiled was the political scene in 1977 that incumbent Democrat Mayor Abe Beam, Jew, accused of gross incompetence, was challenged in his party's primary by five other candidates, including Jew Ed Koch, Mario Cuomo, Italian guy, and Bella Abzug, Jew woman. Eventually, Koch won the mayoralty and served for three terms. He was the most conservative of the three or four. And throughout the summer, there was a serial killer whose brutality seemed a metaphor for what was happening to New York. The self-named Son of Sam killed six and wounded eight, targeting young women in particular. A lone wolf. The murders had begun the summer before for months, and the 70s version of Trolls and Creeps searched the phone directory for names of single women and called in middle of the night, "I'm the Son of Sam, you're next." In August, less than a month after the big blackout and following a massive manhunt, police arrested David Berkowitz, Jew, a mail sorter for the Postal Service. To this day, he is serving six consecutive life sentences, one for each of those he murdered. As hard as many of us would like to try, 1977 was a summer that's not easy to forget, a fraught time here in the city that in some similar ways seems to afflict the entire nation today, yet New York City, a haven for finance, criminals, banking, cynical buccaneers, and mountebanks, rebounded from its 70s fiscal crisis to start the process all over again. Of all the cities in the world, it is second only to Tokyo in gross domestic product. We're in the midst of a $43 billion construction boom that just keeps growing. Yeah, right. But the transit system is falling apart again. The state of infrastructure is dire. Subway service is starting to seem as bad as it was 4 years ago, loaded with Negroes and other Untermenschen. Nobody wants to ride on it that's got any sense without the graffiti. Local and state governments say that overcrowding on the trains is wearing down the tracks and rolling stock, so the subways are collapsing. Major commuter disrupting repairs are taking place on rotted railroad lines leading in and out of Penn Station. The head of Amtrak euphemistically calls it the summer of renewal. Homelessness in the city is higher than it's been since the Great Depression. Rents have risen 22%. The predators are really at work since 1990, and 20.6% of New Yorkers live in poverty. Well, like I said years ago after reading the New York papers, that 250,000 kikes live under the poverty line. Things are pretty bad. The Jews are feeding on each other. Income equality in the city continues to be an outrage. Well, it always was an outrage. It's just like the jungle, boys and girls. Don't you understand the rule of the jungle? The powerful live off the poor, the weak. That's just the way it is. According to the last census, it's the worst in the United States. Debbie Priya Chatterjee, an economist. Now, where in the hell does he come? She come from? I don't know. An economist with the city's independent budget office reports that at the very top, it's top 0.1% who owns 24% of the city's income. Well, what did you expect? That's the way it always is. She told the website Gothamist, "We all know that the city is very unequal, and we got to make it equal. And how are we going to make it equal? It's impossible, you dumb bitch." What I did not anticipating seeing in the data that the share of the bottom 50% has actually fallen. In other words, in this city of millions, 3,700 people raked in 23% of the city's income. 63.7 billion, as blogger Ofo Izuzu said, wrote, "Basically, while most of us find ourselves embroiled in this rat race, a small chunk of folks find themselves watching us run it. Case in point, the gentrification of my West Village neighborhood, once a center of bohemia, radical thought, and modest rents, continued to run amok. 3 years ago, a couple of blocks away, a four-story building was sold for $45 million and is being turned into a single-family mansion." Wow. Four-story building for one family. Probably the Trumps. No, he's got a bigger one than that. As per the website 6 Square Feet, which got a look at the architect's plans, the mansion will have 6 bedrooms, 2 kitchens, its own elevator, a dressing room, and walk-in closet larger than most apartments, a 50-foot lap pool, and more than 4,000 square feet of outdoor space that will include a rooftop terrace. Ironically, the building had been a headquarters for the foster and child care agency, which shows you how much they give a shit about kids. The New York founding, which since 1869 has fought the devastating effect of poverty and lack of opportunity for destitute children and families. And the buyer? He and his brother run a health care hedge fund. Of course they do. In fairness, the millions made from the sale of the former orphanage will go to new programs for those families, so you might be thinking it's a decent exchange. But the constant conversion of properties into luxury vanity homes, especially buildings once used for the public good, seems wrong at a time and in a place when affordable housing for those in desperate need is increasingly non-existent, which will lead to massive upheaval, social upheaval, murder on a large scale, civil war probably. We are New Yorkers and we will carry on. Yes, you will. It's what we do. But like that hot, muggy July night 40 years ago, we feel increasingly powerless. And Tommy says, as you feel more and more powerless, you're more and more apt to become violent. One follows the other. So, New York City, your future is taken care of. You're going to have a hot time in the old town, and you won't be able to escape New York. They'll probably blow up the bridges and stuff like that. So all the major cities are going to be like that. So get ready. Get used to it. And don't expect equality to come around. That's bullshit, and you know it. And don't accept the super billionaires to slack off on raking money off the poor and taxpayers. Don't expect that, baby. They're going to ride it right into the ground. That's all the Trumpites. Yeah, Trumpites. If you don't believe it, then you don't know what's going on. I love people who write about all this stuff and how horrible it is, but they've got really no solutions. Because they know what the solution is. If they're going to have equality, they're going to have to take the money from the rich. They're going to have to tear it out of their hands, tear it out of their banks, tear it out of their safes. That's the only possible way it could be done. But don't look for that to happen. The sheep are just sheep. However, there's still plenty of room left for warlords within the city. You could have many, many warlords that could carve out districts and take over. Yeah, sort of like an ISIS thing. Yeah, ISIS. ISIS, New York. They should have started in New York. Now, here's an interesting article. I'm not going to read too much of it, but this is by a Jew. I enjoy to read these articles by Jews because they tell a lot. They tell a lot of truth. They don't always lie like you think they do, like the right wing keeps saying they do. There are very few journalists in the U.S. or Europe that have the courage to report fairly on Israel's seemingly endless illegal occupation of Palestinian lands. I'm not quite sure where I left off here. I got disturbed. This Jew says in his writings, "I've stopped counting the number of vicious personal attacks that have labeled me a self-hating Jew, Jewish anti-Semite." Here's one that got my attention and the attention of journalist Robert Fisk of the Independent of London, who I introduced one night for a lecture at Berkeley, California, and who then wrote an article about the plight of Jewish journalists and activists in the U.S. who dared write or speak honestly about Israel's brutal and illegal occupation of the Palestinians. Well, what do you expect? They want the land. Survival of the fittest. They're honest about it. They just beat their heads in and take it. That's the way almost all history has been. Quote, "You motherfucking asshole, self-hating Jewish piece of shit. Hitler killed the wrong Jews. He should have killed your parents so a piece of Jewish shit like you would not have been born. God willing, Arab terrorists will cut you to pieces, Daniel Pearl style. Amen." The latter reference to the late Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl, who was kidnapped and decapitated in Pakistan. And at another level, the Israeli consulate in San Francisco has complained to my managers at KPFA, a left-wing radio station, Pacifica Radio, repeatedly about my pro-Palestinian terrorist and anti-Semitic reporting and my apparent hatred for the Jewish state. Boy, you thought you had problems. Here's a guy who's got real problems. He's a Jew being attacked like he's a Nazi. Emmy Award-winning filmmaker and investigative reporter John Pilger, who I don't think is a Jew, he may be, is one of the rare exceptions who has plowed headfirst into my crucial story of our time. Pilger has made two documentaries, 25 years apart, about Palestine, with almost the same name, Palestine as the issue, and then Palestine is still the issue. Well, I think Palestinians have a death wish. Yes, I do, because under the PLO, they were doing pretty good when they took out those Israeli sports figures in, what was it, in Rome? You're shocked that I would say that? No, I'm not. You shouldn't be shocked, because if you want to win, you got to do whatever it takes to win. And the Palestinians have been going pedaling on their bicycle backwards for a long time, so they can't win, and unless they take the situation totally in hand and do what has to be done to win. And we know what that is. Total war. Total guerrilla war. But they've never been able to get that straight, because the people that supposedly that are running the government for the Palestinians are all crooks. They're on the take. If they weren't on the take, they'd be winning for the people, the Palestinian people. People don't ever seem to recognize that fact. When your leadership, when things are going bad, your leadership is selling out. It's as simple as that, man. This reminds me of a movie that I liked once, My Bodyguard. It was a good movie about a kid who was sort of a weakling, but these other guys, they take all his lunch money, beat him up. And finally, he got smart and hired a big kid. And that big kid proceeded to beat the shit out of all the people who were beating on him. But the Palestinians can't do that, because the big guy is the United States. And he's going to beat up on them worse if they do anything that's successful. So they can't win. They can't win until the U.S. loses and the big brother's out of the picture. And that'll happen. That will happen. I spoke recently with Pilger about Palestine and the brutality of the continued occupation. Well, all occupations are brutal. Do you know one occupation is not brutal? What is it? And also about the responsibility for empowering and sustaining the occupation that falls at the feet of the Western press. Well, of course, the Western press is totally in the hip pocket of the crooks in Israel, based on its misreporting, and in some cases not reporting at all, the brutal realities of Israel's iron-fisted occupation of Palestinians. I don't think it's that iron-fisted, because I don't think the Palestinians have declared total war. And I don't think they're going to, because their leaders are bought off, which many critics, as well as several UN officials, have labeled as a form of ethnic cleansing that borders on genocide. Well, that's common in the world. Been going on for thousands and thousands of years. If you're a tribe and you control the area, you're going to hold it no matter what. Or you're going to lose it. You know, it's as simple as that. He who has holds. If you can't hold, you lose. And if you don't use the most vicious and tough methods to hold, you're going to lose. I also spoke with Pilger about the recent G20 meetings in Germany, where President Trump held his first meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Russiagate frenzy. John Pilger's latest film is The Coming War on China. Well, yeah, we're playing it with that game. Sooner or later, they're going to screw around and get in trouble with China. People like war. They lie. They say they don't like war, but every time there's a war, they go marching off singing songs with a band in front of them, flags waving. Pilcher recently gave a moving talk at the Palestine Expo in London on the ongoing battle for the liberation of Palestine. They're not going to liberate Palestine because nobody wants to do the dirty work. Now, if Palestine would have hired the ISIS to come in there and start chopping heads off, something might have changed. Of course, the United States would bomb the Palestinians into dust if they really tried that. You got to get the American State Department and military industrial complex out of your hair if you want to change anything. And that's a big thing to do. Most people don't want to try that. You see what's happened to ISIS. Anyhow, on the world stage, we're right back to where we were before with the Cold War. We got one big power block, that's Putin's people. And the other big power block, that's United States with Trump. So what's changed? What the fuck has changed? Nothing has changed. If you don't get the message, the wink-wink between Putin and Trump, you're missing the boat. Yeah, it's buddy-buddy, wink-wink. We got things tied up now, man. We got everybody where we want them. The only other people are winning are the Chicago Black Ku Klux Klan. Boy, they're really winning. I wish they had some stock issued on the market. I'd buy some of that stock on the Black KKK. So now they want to move the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. That's going to open up a big bag of worms. That's going to cause more violence than you could believe. Yeah, it's just like they look around all over the place to find something that they can cause problems. And then they do it. Moving the capital of Israel to Jerusalem is going to open up a really big bag of worms. I envision the suicide vest business going sky high. Here's a footnote. Russiagate is empowering Jew Prime Minister Netanyahu, nitwit, to strong-arm President Trump, I don't think he has to work too hard, into escalating the Syrian war by abandoning a recent ceasefire and challenging Iran and Russia, reports Robert Perry. Well, let me tell you something. I'm more inclined to support Iran than any of those bastards over there, because you know why? Iran has millions of white people. I don't know how many million or how many hundred thousands, but I've seen the pictures of the people in Iran, and there's a tremendous amount of white Aryan people. Incidentally, I was watching a travelogue on the ISIS, and they had slave markets when ISIS was in full power, and they were selling women. And the highest priced women were women with blue eyes. Interesting, right? That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday, and we'll do it again and see if we can raise some more hell.
Cheer up, Brian. You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you forgot. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the bright side of life. for life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Thank you.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
First thing that we see, you know.
Always look on the bright side of life.
You know, you come from nothing, you go back to nothing. What you lost?
Always look on the right side of life.
Nothing will come from nothing, you know what I say?
Oh, cheer up,
you old bugger. Come on, give us a grin. There you
are.
See? In the film. Incidentally, this record's available
always
in the foyer.
Right.
Someone's got to live as well,
man.
What do you think pays for this rubbish?
Always.